name is Prudence Parkinson Kincaid, grave number 282, cemetery 1, buried 1908. I was admitted to the asylum as patient number 4065 from Muskegon County at the age of 63. But Athens wasn't my first asylum. I had already been institutionalized for approximately 25 years and was part of a high-profile transfer of what the newspapers called lunatic and imbecile inmates to the Athens Asylum in 1904.
From WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, you're listening to Who Lies Beneath the Asylum. I'm Sherry Russo. This is a podcast about restoring dignity and respect by giving a voice to the voiceless. Prudence Parkinson Kincaid's story was a mystery to her descendants until they discovered that she was buried at the Athens Asylum and reached out to us to help put some of the pieces together. Retired library archivist and asylum cemetery researcher Doug McCabe joins us now. Doug, initially there wasn't a lot about Prudence available in the asylum records, but you were able to find a little bit of information. Tell us what you learned about her admittance.
Well, the committal papers show that she was a resident of Falls Township in Muskingum County, Ohio, a native of the state of Pennsylvania, a widowed housewife of unknown religion, and had been in the county infirmary by 1880 and had been in the Columbus Asylum as well.
Okay. But the reason why she was admitted was not available in those records?
Well, at the time I looked at her committal papers, I could not note the reason because of Ohio law. Now, that's changed in the past, and I confess I haven't gone back to look at the committal papers to see what the medical certificate showed about her condition.
The date of her admittance you provided helped her relatives track down several newspaper articles that explained how Prudence ended up at the asylum in Athens. What do you know about that inmate transfer that Prudence was a part of?
I can only assume the transfers were a result of overcrowding in Columbus. These movements were not unusual, as there were transfers from the Cincinnati, Dayton, and Cleveland asylums as well. Again, those could be from overcrowding, but I know that, like, the very first patients who were brought into the Athens Asylum in 1874, a large group of them were sent over from Longview Asylum in Cincinnati, and that was because they were from Southeast Ohio, and it made a lot of sense to then move them back from Cincinnati to Athens, which would be a lot closer and more convenient to their families if they wanted to visit them.
Okay. The newspaper articles referred to Prudence and the more than 20 others who were transferred as, quote, lunatics and imbeciles. Was that the common language that was used to describe people who were at mental institutions back then?
Those words and many others used over the years represent the evolving euphemisms used to describe mental illness. It's not unlike the changing names for the institutions themselves, from, say, lunatic asylum to simply asylum to state hospital. Often, each time, these titles or names become even less descriptive than the prior ones. And you can think of, say, collateral damage used to describe murdering civilians in war. I think that then, too, you can say lunatics describes people who have developed a mental illness, and imbeciles would describe people who are born with mental distresses or deficiencies.
Now it's time to hear Prudence's story through a first-person style account with the help of voice actor Karen Chan and Prudence's third great-grandniece, Tracy Babcock.
I was born in 1840 in Pennsylvania, but moved to Salt Creek Township in Muskegon County, Ohio. My father, Richard, was a laborer. My mother, Elizabeth, took care of me and my five siblings.
We found some census records that show, you know, that she was born in Pennsylvania. We know where she lived in Muskingum County for a few years, and then she just kind of disappears. We know she was married in 1861. We think she had at least one child, possibly two, but the records are really sketchy.
I did marry Joseph Kincaid on August 4th, 1861, in Muskingum County, and had two children. I became a housewife. But by the time the 1880 census was taken, I was labeled as insane and was living in the Muskegon County Infirmary. And Tracy, along with her father, are still looking for the reason why I was originally institutionalized.
Whether or not it's something that, you know, happened to her, or if it was something that was a condition that she had, an illness that she had, or if it was triggered by some event, you know, we're both dying of curiosity to know what her story is.
I was transferred to the Athens Asylum on September 23, 1904, and armed with that date, Tracy was able to find several newspaper articles that explained a little bit about my condition and why I ended up in Athens. The articles referred to me and my fellow patients using words like lunatics and imbeciles, but explained that space became available at the Athens Asylum after many insane patients in Athens were transferred to the Columbus Hospital. The article described me as a woman who was not able to answer questions, had no knowledge of time, and talked in a rambling manner. By the time I was taken to Athens, my husband Joseph had died, so I was a widow. And when I died 4 years later, no one claimed my body for burial.
I think the fact that, you know, she's in that grave because no one really claimed her is incredibly sad, even though she's so far back in the family tree and we had no information about her or didn't know much about her. She's still family.
Joining us now is Paul LaRue. Paul's a retired social studies teacher and history buff and is on the State Board of Education in Ohio. He's also conducted research projects involving veterans and unmarked graves. Paul, thanks for being here with us again today.
Thanks, Sherry.
Paul, tell us about this large inmate transfer of patients from Athens to Columbus and then from the county infirmaries to Athens in 1904. Do you know why this would have happened?
I don't have a specific answer to why it happened, but I can tell you in that period, there was a lot of movement both between state and county facilities. You're on the backside of the 1890 Depression in a lot of places. The money was tight and the state was making changes in how folks were being handled at the time. So you do see, I mean, I've seen that with other, both with soldiers' homes and with other facilities.
Okay. So as we've mentioned, you know, the newspaper articles describing this transfer used words like lunatics and imbeciles to describe the patients who were being transferred. Today, those words just seem horrific. I mean, I even find it hard to say them. Can you talk about why words like this were used at the time?
Absolutely. And I find them, I mean, they make me cringe, like mm-hmm. you. When I hear them, they just make me cringe. It is interesting when you talk about things that are historically and politically correct language. And again, we've referenced in other episodes the fire at the 1868 fire. The Ohio State Journal referred to it as the Central Lunatic Asylum destroyed by fire. In 1881, the New York Times says an idiot asylum burned. Oh. So we hear those painful terms being used. And again, I talk about the fact that lunatic goes back as far as 1290. They thought, in fact, interestingly enough, in the 1840 U.S. Census, one of the questions is about insane and idiots in public and private charge. So that language, and sadly, the language continued to be used over and over and over again. So we see that it just gets stuck. And like I said, those are words You can walk out on the street and we still hear those words today.
Absolutely. Well, with this kind of labeling, it's no wonder why some would opt not to claim their relative who died at the institution, right? I mean, if you have that kind of stigma surrounding someone, you wouldn't want to be associated with that.
Absolutely. And it's this thing, and again, I go back because we've had this come up with veterans that we've worked with where they're in institutions, and it's just, it's hard to think that someone has, you know, served their country in many cases and come back and they find themselves in these situations and families, whether out of fear or stigma, are not able to, are not able to give them, you know, that decent burial, that headstone, so that at least when you walk by, you see a name.
Yeah. Well, was it this line of thinking and, I guess, name calling that led to the eugenics movement, you know, which was the movement to eliminate undesirable genetic traits in the human race through selective breeding? I think that was happening in the United States in like the 1940s. I mean, was it that kind of labeling and at least the thought process that led to that?
I think the labeling certainly contributed to it. I mean, I think there were obviously worse intentions than that. But I think when you label, and again, I just know this from being a high school teacher, when you use certain language, you become numb to it. And I think, you know, students would use language and I'd be like, that's wrong, but you use that. And then I think it makes it easier to then dehumanize people. And literally what you're talking about is dehumanization.
So I know you said that we still hear these words today, but it has gotten better, I think. What kind of led to the change from calling someone a lunatic to calling them mentally ill?
Well, I think some of it does go back to what, you know, Dr. Kirkbride's vision of how things were supposed to be, you know, refer to people as mentally ill instead of lunatics. And I think in some cases I know there's been movements in the government to expunge some of the terminology that literally, you know, the fact where they were calling, you know, using the words idiot and insane and lunatic, you know, to try to, you know, improve the way the language is used, because language is super important.
Okay. Thank you so much, Paul, for your time and your ability to kind of put this all in context for us.
Thanks, Sherry.
I am no longer just grave number 282 in Cemetery 1 at the Athens Asylum. My name is Prudence Parkinson Kincaid.
We turn to you. We now know the story of Prudence Parkinson Kincaid, but there's so much more work to be done to give a voice to those who were voiceless. We want to hear your stories about long-lost relatives in your families who you believe may be buried under a numbered tombstone at cemeteries across the country. We'd love to share your story and see if the work done in Athens might lead you to some answers and maybe even a name on their grave marker. Email us at wholiesbeneath@woub.org. Thank you for listening, and until next time, take care of each other. Who Lies Beneath the Asylum is a production of WOUB Public Media in Athens, Ohio, written by me, Sherry Russo. Adam Rich is our audio engineer, artwork by Sean Anderson. Special thanks to Doug McCabe and Paul LaRue for contributing their knowledge and voices to this podcast, and Karen Chan for her work as the voice of Prudence. If you like the show, please rate and subscribe or visit woub.org to learn more.